Hi guys. Hey. Welcome to another splendiferous episode of History of a Haunting. I am one of your hosts, Laura Ackerman.
And I'm your other host, Carrie Hopper. I can't
say coast.
Your ghost, Carrie Hopper.
Great. Already up.
Day already, man.
And double recording, Jesus. Already off to a roaring stop.
It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a really good one. So we're just going to jump right into the EVPs of the episode. I want to promote our hoodies. Hoodies. It's getting cold out there, guys. We have hoodies. You need a hoodie. Come buy a hoodie. HOAHpodcast.com/shop. Hoodies. Are $45, $5 shipping. And we also have just sweatshirts, no hood. Hoodless hoodies, if you will. $40, $40, $5 shipping, buy two or more, free shipping. The
for
other
horsemen friends out there. Go ahead and say that.
I want to remind everybody that today, the day this episode drops for Patreons on Saturday, the 20th of November, is the Destination Fear. I've got my hoodie on. Destination Fear episode of the Phelps Dodge Hospital. So please be sure to check that out. It drops early in the morning on Discovery Plus, and then I believe it's 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Travel Channel. So, yeah, check it out. I love it. And we will be discussing it at length in the following week's episode. Which Laura's like, great, I gotta watch this now.
So excited. I can't wait. Because I need more shit to do. But, you know. At least that will be fun. I do enjoy the show, and I'm excited to see what they get at the hospital. I miss it.
Yeah. And like you said last week, it's really cool to like see them go to places that we've been because like we remember that. So, the other thing I want to announce to everybody, we are super excited, I am super excited to announce that my team, Southern Entities Paranormal, has, made the offer and she has accepted. Laura is now our new part-time investigator in training of Southern Entities Paranormal. So yay!
I'm excited.
Good. I'm glad.
You love me. You really love me.
We do. We really love you. You're a phenomenal investigator, and Chris and Audra and I were very, very impressed with the way that you investigated the old hospital on College Hill in West Virginia. Yes. You did so great. We were so impressed. You didn't blow off every weird little thing that you experienced, and you experienced some stuff. You admitted that you had no explanation for it, even though you and I tried to figure out where that oxygen machine sound was coming from.
We did.
Really impressed with your investigation skills because you really did try to come up with a logical explanation, which is what we do. We don't go in, you know, looking for ghosts. We just, you know, we have experiences. We try to debunk them, really, and you're doing really great, and we're really excited to bring you on board. She is part time simply because she does live in Arizona. We're here in North Carolina, but she's coming with us on some major investigations for 2022, including Trans-Allegheny Private Investigation, Waverly Hills, Brushy Mountain Penitentiary, and then one we haven't picked yet. So, Laura, if you've got any ideas of where you'd like to go, let us know.
Maybe you guys should come this way, or we should meet in the middle. There's a lot of different places. Maybe Chicago? Maybe, I mean,
you know, that's a good, that's a really good idea. There's a ton of places in Arizona. Unfortunately, Phelps is now a hotel, or becoming a hotel, so right. We can't investigate it. But there's a bunch of places in Arizona and, like, the surrounding area that we could probably
absolutely
poke around in.
Like I said, there's so many cool haunted places everywhere. We can kind of just pick an area and
right.
go.
We can pick an area and go. So congratulations, Laura. Thank you so much for accepting our offer. We're really excited to have you a member of Southern Entities. So yay.
I'm excited.
The next thing is we have a Patreon update. We are going to be revamping our Patreons and the exclusive content that they get. The first thing is our conspiracy theories. We've been doing one a month. They've been really, really popular with the Patreons. And there have been times where we have had to default and release those as regular episodes simply because we were preparing for the Stanley Hotel or, you know, bitches were moving or, you know. So there were a few times that we did have to release a conspiracy theory for Patreons as regular episodes, and they've been really, really popular. So what we're going to do in 2022 is we are going to tiptoe our little selves into true crime, and we're going to bring you one true crime story a month. Same flow as the conspiracy theories. Laura's going to pick a true crime story, and I won't know what she's going to tell me about. Next month, same thing. So, we're going to stop the conspiracy theories for Patreon. We're going to bring in true crime. We have had a lot of requests for that. So we would love for you to join us on Patreon and come in and see how Laura and I do true crime stories. We have two donor levels. $2 is our cheers team cheers clink, and then $5 is our team snort laugh. Everybody gets the special episodes, the conspiracy theories, and now the true crime. And then we're going to shift true crime into conspiracy theories into the regular episode rotation. And bring you a conspiracy theory, a cryptid, a really crazy story. Laura did Mothman. She did phenomenal. It was one of our most popular episodes. You did so great on that, honey. Oh my God. It was.
There's so much cool stuff out there like that. Something can, there's crazy cults. There's all these crazy cryptids. There's crazy stories about, stuff governments have done. And all it's kind of fun. They're kind of fun they're really fun to do.
They are really fun to do.
Like, really enjoy that. I mean, I do at least. Like, really enjoy
I did. Yeah.
Learning about this stuff and talking about it, reading about it.
Me too. Yeah, it's a great time. So we are going to bring the Patreons one true crime episode every month starting in January, and we're going to filter in some of the conspiracy theories to the regular rotations, the regular episodes. We are also going to bring back, starting Thanksgiving weekend, guys, for the Patreons only, Booze of the Week. And essentially what that is Laura and I will go out and we will find some of our favorite drinks that we love to drink, that we love to make, that are maybe holiday themed, maybe themed for whatever's going on. You know, if it's January, maybe we find a really cool, like really warm, hot drink. We put it on Patreon and we give you the recipe and we encourage everybody to try it. So we're going to bring back Booze of the Week. It was really popular with the Patreons when Archie was on the show with me, and we sort of let that kind of fall by the wayside. So we're bringing it back, and that's starting with the episode that drops on Thanksgiving weekend. We will bring back we'll have a different Booze of the Week every single week. Laura does one week, I do the next. So that's all I have for EVPs. We did kind of blast through these quickly. We have a double recording tonight, guys. We are super behind on the conspiracy theories. We're trying to get caught up. So that's all I have. Laura, what about? I'm good. I'm good. Laura, what about you? What do you got?
That's it. I mean, you covered it. You jammed it.
Cool.
Good job.
Okay, yep. Great. All right. Well, then let's dive into this episode. It's really fun, guys. I love, love, love this one. Laura, where are we taking them today?
Today, we're taking you to the Langham Hotel in London, England.
Woohoo! I love all things London. Drop your sources on us.
Wikipedia.org, mxpublishing.com, bbc.com, and langhamhotels.com. Pretty exciting stuff. I know you were a big Anglophile, huh?
Like, oh, God.
Everything that has to do with England.
I absolutely do.
Up your alley.
Absolutely.
You haven't been here, to be honest.
I mean, we have gone past it and by it, but we didn't go in. It's very rare that you actually see a doorman outside of a hotel, and they have that here. And it's right in the heart. Oh, God. It's super fancy. It's super fancy. Let's take a look at a quick picture.
Ooh, fancy.
I mean, look at this building. It's just
really beautiful.
classical, and it was built in the Victorian era, and it's just, God, I love it.
It sure was.
I just love it.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful building, and it really does kind of almost look like a castle of its own.
It does, right? Yeah. It really does. I fucking love it. I'm super excited. But I purposely, in my research, I purposely didn't read too much of the history because I love your history. I love the things that you find and share with me and with everybody. So I really kind of wanted to be surprised.
Good.
Okay. Bye. So
drop it. I surprise you then.
Yay. Okay.
Surprise everybody. So, the Wyndham Hotel, like I said, is located in London. It's on the West End. It's on Regent Street, and it's situated in the district of Marylebone. Did I say that right?
Marylebone. Yeah.
On Lingham Palace.
We actually looked up. We actually looked up the pronunciation of that because it's.
We did.
It's spelled Marylebone, and we didn't want to sound like dumb Americans, so we.
Yeah, I still fucked it up, so you're welcome. it faces up Portland Place towards Regent's Park. It is one of the largest and best-known traditional-style grand hotels in all of Europe, and especially in London. The Langham was designed by John Giles and built by the Lucas Brothers between 1863 and 1865 at a cost of £300,000, which in 2019 would have been equivalent to almost £29 million.
In
dollars, that's $39 million.
Oh, my God. Okay. The minute you had said like 300, I was like, that sounds like it's really expensive for that time. Yeah, so,
sure was.
Yay. Good job on the money conversion.
Hey, I did even look that up. It was, at the time, the largest and most modern hotel in the city. It featured 100 water closets, 36 bathrooms, and the first hydraulic lifts in England.
Wow.
The opening ceremony was on the 10th of June, 1865, and was performed by the Prince of Wales.
No way.
Yeah, it was a big fucking deal. So,
wow.
When the hotel opened in 1865, there was a 360-foot deep artisan well that provided the purest water to be found in all of London.
Really?
To the hotel, yeah. So right now, and currently they have a bar that's called the Artesian Bar that took its name from this well. And that bar is apparently so amazing. It has been voted the world's best bar 4 consecutive years in a row by Drink International.
I mean, we gotta go.
I'm sold. Let's go.
I mean, we gotta go. That's all I need to hear. Episode over. Goodbye. We're going to London.
We'll phone it in from the bar.
We'll do a live from the bar. Yeah.
We got this. It's no problem.
Fine.
Yeah. The hotel also claims to have invented the afternoon tea. And they do a very popular tea service there as well. So when the hotel was built, the original company had to be liquidated because of an economic slump. And new management came in, but they acquired the hotel for less than half of what it cost to build it.
Deal. Score.
Right?
Right. Yay.
Yeah, and lucky for them, it didn't take them long to make it a success. Part of that is owed to an American former Union Army officer named James Sanderson. He was appointed the general manager, and through him, the hotel developed an extensive American clientele, which included Mark Twain. It was also patronized by Napoleon III, Oscar Wilde, Dvorak, Toscanini, and Sibelius. I probably mispronounced that too.
hold on. We're going to look that up. Just a sec, guys. Oscar Wilde, Mark Twain, Napoleon III. Holy crap.
Yeah. They did actually get electric light installed in the entrance in the courtyard at the early date of 1879.
Wow.
And Napoleon III, or Louis Napoleon III, spent much of his enforced exile from France at the Langham.
Okay.
In around 1871. Charles Dickens mentioned the hotel in his London Guide that he wrote in 1879. And he said that the Langham was the most expensive hotel meal to be had in London, but for large dinner parties, there was nowhere else to go.
Wow. Okay.
So he was also a fan.
I actually quote him in my part too. I do. Yeah. Charles Dickens, you can go to his house in London. Like you can, it's a museum now and you can go there. And it was one of the places we had on our list when we went to London almost six years ago. You need like a full month to see everything in London, and Charles Dickens' house unfortunately didn't make the cut. So P.L. Travers' house was another one we wanted to go and see. I love British authors. I think there's just something about a British author that is so succinct and so brilliant in their writing. I love them. Yeah.
Then you're gonna love this next story.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect time you said that. The hotel can make 4 immediate claims on the interest of the Sherlock Holmes or Conan Doyle enthusiast. So on August 30th, 1889, Mr. Doyle attended a dinner at the hotel at the invitation of J.M. Stoddart, who at the time was the editor for Lippincott's Monthly Magazine. Among the other guests at this dinner was none less than Oscar Wilde. So Doyle himself regarded it as a golden evening. And by the end of the dinner, he had been commissioned by Stoddart to write what became his second Sherlock Holmes story, The Sign of 4. Wilde also received a commission and subsequently wrote his only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, which was published in the same year as Conan Doyle's novel.
Stop it! Are you kidding?
No, I'm serious.
Oh my god! I love Dorian Gray.
Yeah, great. And I know, me too. I'm a big Oscar Wilde fan, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, my God.
Yeah, cool, huh?
Yeah, so cool. I don't know why I feel like you were like, and we're going to meet them right now. I'm so excited by this. I was like, holy crap, I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. Okay. So the memory of this evening was certainly still in Mr. Doyle's mind when he wrote the early part of his story as Captain Morstan, the father of Holmes' client, Mary Morstan. They're described as staying at the Langham 10 years prior to the events of the story. And the final two references to the hotel are made in A Scandal in Bohemia and The Disappearance of Lady Frances Carfax. In the former, the King of Bohemia stays at the Langham under an assumed name. And in the latter, the hotel is used by the Honorable Philip Green during his London stay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's in several of the Sherlock Holmes stuff, which is pretty cool.
Oh, my God. Let's take a quick look at some of the rooms in this fucking place. Just look. It's ridiculous.
Oh wow, yeah, it's so beautiful.
Isn't it gorgeous? Like, look at that fireplace. Look at that mirror. The chandelier. Okay, so when we were talking earlier on the phone, and I was getting the overlays set up, I said, "Oh, never. You know, this room reminds me of," and I'll tell you later. Now is the time. This room reminds me of, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it reminds me of the room in The Great Gatsby, the most recent one with Leonardo DiCaprio. It reminds me of the hotel room that they got in that movie. I don't know why. It's just very, like, the overstuffed leather, the dark wood, those chairs, the drapes. It reminds me of that scene where everybody kind of loses their mind and they fight and, you know.
I love a Chesterfield sofa. I
mean, it's gorgeous.
It's really beautiful.
Look at that. It's stunning. Mm-hmm.
It's really nice.
Isn't it beautiful? And I don't...
It is.
It's just gorgeous. I'm going to find... If it takes me forever, I'm going to find a replica mirror like that for your mantle.
Oh, well, thank you. I have a mirror on my mantle that I just bought.
You do. We should, you know what we should do? We should do some decoupage and make an ornate border. No?
Well, no.
Have I gone overboard with the crafts?
Maybe a little bit. I think you should just stick to the soap.
Okay. And the cookies.
And the cookies now. Okay. Unfortunately, the Langham was hard hit by the Great Depression, and the owners attempted to sell the site to the BBC. But the broadcasting house was built across Portland Place instead. During World War II, much of its regular clientele had taken off to the countryside, but the building in Regent Street remained open and served as a first aid point and military post.
Oh, I think I read something about this.
Yeah. So on the 16th of September 1940, it came under intense fire from Luftwaffe raiders. who destroyed a large section of the West Wing. As Ellingham was so close to the BBC's broadcasting house across the road, it was in constant danger from the German bombers.
Sure.
The BBC wartime staff used to broadcast from the roof of the Ellingham, in particular, the U.S. correspondent Edward Murrow.
Wow, really?
J.B. Priestley. Yeah, cool, huh?
Yeah.
So J.B. Priestley was also a guest in this period to be close to the broadcasting house for his frequent late-night transmissions of Britain Speaks to North America. In 1941, the notorious Soviet spy, Burgess, was involved in what became known as the Ellingham incident.
Oh.
An internal memo from his wartime employer, the BBC, revealed that he tried to break down the door of his room drunk with a fire extinguisher when he could not get in.
I think I dated that guy.
Right? I didn't know him.
I think I had that date.
I think it was high school together.
I think so.
So Burgess was a BBC employee and a British diplomat who was a central part of the Cambridge spy ring. So the Cambridge spy ring was
a love a good spy
kingdom. Me too. That passed information to the Soviet Union during World War II and was active from the 1930s until at least into the early 50s.
Whoa, shit. That's a long time for a fucking spy. Yeah, that's a long time.
So these spy guys are, this story is pretty funny. And we know that they were in and out of the Ellingham, right? So,
right.
I just think it's so interesting that they were probably doing drops and all kinds of crazy stuff in there, right? So it began with Donald McLean, who was a British diplomat and a spy for the Soviet Union during World War II and early into the Cold War. McLean had studied at the University of Cambridge in the 30s, where he met Guy Burgess. Burgess was also a British diplomat who spied for the Soviet Union, but they were both recruited by Soviet intelligence operatives and became undercover agents. McLean began delivering information to the Soviet intelligence operatives as a member of the British Foreign Office in 1934. Soon after, Burgess followed, giving them information as well from his position as a BBC correspondent up until 1938. Hold on. Hey, bye. Sorry. Are you ready?
Yeah, we're totally good. The minute you said hold on, I paused it, so we're good. Although we're recording now, so. Hi, guys. Zane says hi.
Right? So where was I? Okay, so so they were in the Foreign Office, and then Burgess was giving them information when he was a BBC correspondent, and then as an active member of the MI6.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and then he kept giving them information as, you know, a member of the British Foreign Office up until 1944.
Wow.
McLean and Burgess were soon known as the hopeless drunks, due to the fact that they had a hard time keeping their secret occupations to themselves.
One time, Laura,
highly intoxicated, Burgess was exposing his second identity. He was leaving a pub where he accidentally dropped one of the secret files he had taken from the Foreign Office.
I feel like this is the kind of spies we would fucking be.
Right? Exactly. That's why I think the story's so funny. Like, they were terrible at it. And still somehow managed. McLean was also known to have loose lips and said to have leaked information about his secret duties to his brother and close friends. Although they struggled to keep secrets, that did not stop them from delivering information. And it is said that Burgess handed over about 389 top secret documents to the KGB within the early part of 1945, along with an additional 168 documents in 1949.
Jesus.
Right. So in the early summer of 1951, Burgess and McLean made international headlines by disappearing. So they had taken a ship from Southampton to St. Malo, France, a train to Paris, and then a flight to Moscow.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, their whereabouts were unclear for some time, and the suspicion that they had defected to the Soviet Union turned out to be correct. And that did not become public knowledge until 1956, when the two appeared at a press conference in Moscow.
Wow.
Yeah, England didn't even issue a warrant for their arrest until 1962.
First they had to search the streets for any other secret files they might have dropped outside of pubs. Right, exactly. Hang on, let's see what else.
These guys couldn't have done that much damage.
I mean, let Russia have them. It's fine.
Hope you guys like vodka.
Right? Jesus.
Right. after the war, the BBC bought the Ellingham and leased sections out of the hotel as offices. Grand Hotel, the iconic radio program featuring the soothing classical sounds of the Palm Court Orchestra, was also broadcast from there.
That sounds like a magical time, frankly.
It really does. In 1986, the BBC sold the property. The Langham continued throughout the 20th century to be a favored spot with members of the royal family, such as Diana, Princess of Wales, and politicians, including Winston Churchill and Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Langham was sold to Great Eagle Holdings, based in Hong Kong in 1995. Okay. And they did a ton of refurbishments just millions and millions of pounds, basically. But they're the ones that restored it to its original form. And then they created they renamed a bunch of their hotels using the Langham name.
Oh, so it's like a chain, like Hilton or what have you.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Just to kind of see we just saw a guest room, but just kind of see the money that they poured into this hotel. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can get the next one.
Yeah. So they wanted it to be perfect. They spent, I think the last renovation, they spent 80 million pounds.
On just this one room, or because this room looks really, look at it's got like a two-sided, like small staircase that goes up into this huge four-poster bed. Super ornate, and we need to go. Look at that, I'm telling you what, Powerball win, it's fucking on. But look at the gold ornate and the candelabras and the fireplace. I need my bed up a staircase. That's probably hand-carved wood. Look at these little, ladies that look like they're playing violins in the bedpost. It's just...
Amazing.
It's really, really quite amazing, yeah. I definitely love it. And we will be going the minute... we hit the Powerball. Then the money comes in. So Patreons, come on, join us. Let us go to the Langham Hotel.
Right, we're going to need a lot of you to pitch in.
A lot of you.
And so the final thing is that the hotel was also featured in a James Bond film, GoldenEye, the one that came out in 1995.
Oh, really? Who was James Bond in that one? Brosnan?
I think so. I think it had to be Pierce Brosnan,
I'm not a big James Bond fan. Are you?
They used it to substitute for a hotel in Russia, actually. But yeah, pretty cool.
Russia, the same guys that took the stupid spies?
Oh.
All right. Well, now I have faith in us that you and I can eventually one day join the CIA.
I'm down.
I mean, if those are the qualifications.
MK Ultra some shit.
Fucking, we're on it, guys. We have some lives to bring to you. I love it. So that's where we're at now with the hotel. Did I interrupt? Are you done? I'm sorry. Go on.
No, I'm done. That was it. The last thing was the James Bond film.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. Great job.
It was.
Great job. As always, Laura, you always pick the most interesting and relevant and purposeful parts of the history of a location. So great job. This time is no different. We are going to pause it really quick because I have closed my notes. And so I will be... we'll be right back. Like I said, it's just a hot second for you guys. We'll be right back. Okay, so I found my stuff, I think. Okay, I had pulled up Gettysburg. Sorry, guys. What do you
That's
hear your son?
Be a real weird combo,
right? Gettysburg.com and Ghosts of Gettysburg. No, I'm kidding. my sources are Londonist.com, Five Star Alliance, HuffPost, GhostStory.co.uk, and StoriedHotels.com. So, you guys, Laura, you all know I am such a fan of London and everything to do with it. even is given it's almost 2,000 years old, the actual city of London. And this is going all the way back to Roman Londinium, in 43. Not BCE, 43, like 43 AD, which I guess they're now calling CE. Let's not get into it.
CE or something, yeah.
BCE is before the Common Era.
Before
mm-hmm.
the Common Era.
Before Christ, essentially. And then Christ, and then AD was what we were saying, but now it's CE, which is Common Era. So 43, year 43, essentially.
Okay.
So that's when the Romans took over London. They named it Londinium. I love the town, everything about it. And you can't actually throw a rock in the city without hitting a ghost. Especially a city that's almost 2,000 years old.
Oh, yeah. So much history.
Yeah. And we've covered several British locations on this show. The Tower of London, Hampton Court Palace, Dover Castle. But we've actually never covered a hotel. I went back through and I'm like, surely we have. Nope, we haven't. So this is a good one.
That is surprising.
Right?
Yeah, it's great.
And this is a good one to start with. So this one is just so cool. The architecture, the history, the location, all of it is just really, really awesome. Laura's going to get that mirror. I'm going to get that bed. I mean, it's inspiring us all the time. So here's what we have. There seem to be several spirits in this five-star hotel, but there are five who are the most common, so let's start with those. There's a figure of a man in military dress who stands by a window on the fourth floor, said to be the ghost of a German prince who jumped out of the window before the First World War. There's also a ghostly butler who is still trying to attend to his guests on the third floor. Then there's the ghost with a gaping wound in his face who tends to loiter in the corridors.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, do we really, like, in our afterlife look how we did when we died? Because that's terrible.
Right.
I don't like that. That would be terrifying to see. There's also the ghost of Napoleon III. Laura, like you mentioned, he is said to haunt the basement. So Emperor Louis Napoleon III spent much of his last years enforced exile from France at the Langham Hotel. So missing equipment, strange noises that come from the basement are attributed to this ghost, as are cold spots that seem to indicate he's about to show up, or at least mess with you, really.
Huh.
Yeah, so the most common ghostly sighting is a man in Victorian evening wear, which just sounds so glamorous, in room 333. So the legend goes that a doctor killed his new wife while they were on their honeymoon and then committed suicide. It seems that he is stuck there or unwilling or unable to leave. So in 1973, one of the journalists from the BBC, a man by the name of James Alexander Gordon, woke up.
What was it?
I heard Zane.
I don't know what he's doing.
Throwing up, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think he's making weird voices, like with while he's playing his game. I don't know.
Koi does it too.
Some kind of guttural voice.
Yeah, Koi does it too. There have been a number of times where my mom and I will be downstairs watching TV and we'll hear Koi. And we're like, I think he might need an exorcism again because he's just making the most insane noises.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. The best is when he has his window open because the entire neighborhood can hear him.
Like, I don't know what the fuck is in that house.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've had to actually text Koi and be like, hey, dude, we're downstairs and we can fucking hear you. You're echoing through the neighborhood. And he's like, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. Well, then shut your window. It's fine. Anyway, so this journalist, James Alexander Gordon, was staying in room 333. And he woke up one night in October and he saw this fluorescent ball of light turning into the shape of a man with the lower half of his legs missing. That's very specific.
Yeah, it is. That's weird.
Right? So apparently this apparition was hovering above the floor, and he stared at him with these kind of blank, this kind of blank look on his face, these blank, empty eyes. And he opened his arms and started to walk toward this reporter who was lying in bed. That reporter promptly fled the room.
Yeah, I'm all, no fucking thank you.
Yeah. You're not a fan of people interrupting your sleep.
Anyway, yeah, live people, but like, even more fucked up if they don't have fucking legs.
Right, and they're walking towards you all, you know, with right. their arms open. Like, that's just hella creeps. This next story is actually kind of wild because it's not just one individual. So other reports in the intervening years, which is clearly written by the article I stole this from and am now reading to you, that I would never talk like that, but other reports in the years that followed his story, how about that? The England cricket team made the headlines when they reported strange goings on at the Langham Hotel when they stayed there. So during 2014, and this is recent, Laura, recent, right? During the 2014 game against, I don't remember, and I did not write that down, against the,
other cricket team that right. played against.
Yeah, mm-hmm. French mermen. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Yes, legit too. Some members of the English team said that they were having trouble sleeping in their rooms, and some of their wives even refused to stay in the hotel. Now, one of the cricket team members, players, batters, I'm not familiar with cricket. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me neither.
A gentleman by the name of Stuart Broad recounted one experience during his stay that forced him to move rooms. He says, quote, "It was so hot in the room, I just couldn't sleep. Then all of a sudden, the taps in the bathroom came on for no reason. I turned the lights on, and the taps turned themselves off. Then I turned the lights off again, and the taps came back on. It was very weird. It really freaked me out. I ended up asking to move rooms." There is nothing I can think of when I read this to debunk that or answer that question. When you turn a light on, that's electricity. When you turn water on, that's plumbing. The two are not connected.
They shouldn't be, no.
That's yeah. it's no, they shouldn't be, exactly. So I thought it was really weird that that was the experience that he was having. I could not figure that out for the life of me. So his girlfriend was pretty scared too. And one of their teammates, their wife would not stay at the hotel because she was so afraid of the ghosts. Another player he mentioned had some problems sleeping as well. He was on the third floor, which is where a lot of the issues are. Something weird is going on. In the end, he went to this player went to share a room with his teammate, Matt Pryor, mm-hmm. who actually was sleeping in just a twin room. So he probably had to sleep on the floor, or he slept with his buddy in a twin bed. Either way, that none of it sounds comfortable, and it was all more preferable to what was going on in his room on the third floor in 333.
That's funny.
Yeah. So there are some who say that the choice of room isn't accidental. Some who believe in the paranormal draw attention to the fact that the number 333 is half of 666, the number of the beast, or the devil, or Lucifer, or what have you. It has been argued that this is the time when the gap between worlds of the living and the dead is at its smallest during the Halloween season, allowing spirits to cross over more easily. Of course, it could be a complete coincidence or the power of suggestion. I don't actually know how either one of those could justify seeing a ball of light turn into a man, but sure, all right. And skeptics will say that the whole thing is a load of rubbish, which is also directly stolen from the article that I took from the British paper, The Telegraph, .co.uk, or ghoststory.co.uk. Nice. Yeah. So the other ghosts include... there is a ghost who has a thing for tipping guests out of bed while they're sleeping. One shook the bed in room 333 with such enthusiasm that the occupant fled the hotel in the middle of the night. I love it.
I'd be super pissed if I got tipped out of bed, though. I'm not gonna lie.
Right? That wouldn't...
End up on the ground like that. Fucking looks good. Especially, like, you fall down the stairs in your ornate bed.
That's really going to hurt. Exactly. Land on one of my golden candelabras. I don't love it.
Yeah, not good.
Not good. A butler is also seen wandering the corridors in his holy socks, which I think is really cute. Like, he's working so hard. He's lost his shoes, and all that's left are his holy socks, but he's there for the guests.
Nice.
There is a footman, and again, this is taken straight from the article that I read, but I left it in because I love the way it's written. A footman in a pale blue livery and a powdered wig.
Oh, that's cool.
I love that. Apparently in May 2003, there was a woman staying in the room and she suddenly checked out of the hotel without giving any reason for her premature departure. A few days later, though, she sent a letter back to the hotel explaining why she left the way she had. She said that her sleep had been interrupted by the activities of the ghost that kept her awake by repeatedly shaking the bed during the night.
Oh.
I know. On the ground floor, staff and visitors alike have seen the ghosts of, again, not my wording, have seen the ghosts of bewigged footmen in the halls. This is why I love British literature. I love it. In the halls and in the winding corridors. Sightings of these footmen are usually brief glimpses, but one visitor, however, phoned the front desk asking why her bags had not been brought to her room yet. Apparently, she said she had left her bags with an oddly dressed porter, and after describing the porter and his clothing, she was notified that the baggage handlers had not worn that uniform she had described for over 80 years.
Wow.
The woman's luggage was found where she had left it, near the lobby.
And that's cool.
Right? I like that one. That's a really, really good one. The upper floors of the building are apparently haunted, again, by the butler. But this one is dressed smartly, and he's carrying a tray. It actually has been speculated, though, that he's not a butler, but an early radio presenter from when the BBC was involved with it, wearing a dinner jacket. So there's there's been kind of two descriptions of this particular apparition. So that's what I have for the ghosts of the Langham Hotel, guys. I think they're all very fun. I think they're all really great, except for the bed shaking ghost and the one that won't let you sleep. I do want to say in closing, and Laura had alluded to the opulence and the grandeur of the hotel and how afternoon tea, which is a staple in London, is certainly something that my family and I wanted to do before we left and we didn't get a chance to. But taking afternoon tea at the Langham Hotel has been a thing since it opened. The Palm Court was the birthplace, as Laura mentioned, of this peculiarly British tradition. It's an indulgence that has spanned the centuries, and it has been delighting 21st century guests as much as those early trendsetters. The article that I read says that at £55 per person, which is X amount of US dollars, Laura, you can do the conversion for me because I didn't bother. I'm a bad podcaster. So we'll say $62 American dollars per person is considerably more expensive than the 1865 introductory price of 7 pence. Nevertheless, it is actually still the best way to experience some Langham pampering if you don't want to be as reckless with money as Oscar Wilde suggested. Alongside it, overnighters and day guests can spoil themselves at the hotel's Lando restaurant. It is its glamorous artisan bar that Laura had mentioned, and decadent Shuan Spa. Luxury is not actually rationed here at the Langham Hotel, and neither is the kind of service that makes one feel special. Of course, by timing your visit for daytime, there's actually no guarantee of any kind of ghostly encounters that might be the stuff of nightmares. So you can sleep well and dream of how one day you will be able to afford the £24,000 or $37,000 a night penthouse you know you're worth it. Here is that room. I'm worth it, Laura. I'm worth it, and we need to go. I think you're muted, babe. There we go.
Better? Can you hear me now? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's beautiful, but yeah. Uh-huh. We're just going to have to dream of it.
I disagree, and I don't approve. I mean, we have to have common goals, and this penthouse should be one of them.
All right. I'm down for it. I really am. It looks beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful? Mm-hmm, it's really huge. Yeah. People of the likes of, God, Lady Gaga and, you know, probably 900 Kardashians. And, you know, there it's had its fair share of celebrities that have been there. Like you said, Princess Diana. Mm-hmm. I think when we were on our tour in London, we had passed by the, and I'm going to butcher this guy, the Grosvenor Hotel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, yeah. That's actually, I believe that's the hotel that Kate Middleton actually stayed at the night before her wedding and got ready for her wedding at that hotel, which is actually not far from this one. So when you go to London, I mean, the tours, they hit them all up, guys. You can definitely check this out. But that's what I've got for the Langham Hotel in London. I'm very excited to stay there one day. I will be rich and famous. Maybe not famous, but I will fucking be rich. And I will stay there, and I will bring Laura, and we will live TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram you. what'd you think, Laura?
I enjoyed the stories from the hotel. Your ghost stories were great. I love...
Thanks.
And pretty much anything to do with spies.
Oh, God. I love a good spy. These weren't good spies, but I love a good spy story.
Yeah. So yeah. I love the fact that there's, like, spy stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
You know, the World War II was getting bombed. Like, you know.
Just it was crazy.
It's very juicy. The Oscar Wilde, who I love. Like, I mm-hmm. went to his statue in Dublin. I went to his grave in Paris. And, you know, so.
Yeah, I do.
Just love him. And, of course, Sherlock Holmes. Come on.
Of course. Like, which also.
And that's just a touch of the history that has, you know, happened in this hotel.
Oh, for like, sure. For sure. Cool. Did you know that Arthur Conan Doyle was a hardcore believer in the paranormal? Big believer in the spiritualist movement. Yeah. Really hardcore.
I think I do know that. I think we talked about it maybe on a different show.
I think we did. He used to be really good friends with Harry Price, who was real mm-hmm. big into the spiritualist movement. They had a falling out. It's a whole thing. We may or may not cover it on the show or in a Patreon episode. I haven't decided quite yet what I want to do with that one, but it's a story worth telling for sure. Because, like you said, Sherlock Holmes. Anyway, Laura, why don't you tell everybody where they can find us on all the social medias?
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and the Twitter at HOH Podcast. And at, what is it called? On the TikTok, at HOH Podcast, at HOH Carrie, and at HOAH co-host Laura.
What is it called? It's obviously called the TikTok.
The TikTok.
The TikTok. Yeah. Anyway, guys, we would have a strange history for you, but I have misplaced the book because I cleaned my office, changed it all around, as you can see, and I was so thorough in my organization that I can't remember where I put the book.
It's in a safe place, I'm sure.
Super safe place. But we wanted to say thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for coming to London with us, covering this hotel. We are going to jam out of here because we have three, not one, not two, but three conspiracy theories we need to record in the next 2 days. So we're going to jump on that for our dear beloved Patreons who are about to get an episode dump. It's kind of crazy. I don't have anything else to let folks know, Laura, except that they need to stay safe out there because you never know who
or what
is listening. Thanks, guys. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.